My friend was throwing a Halloween party with her sorority, and she'd invited me and a couple of other guys. It was a low-key event. Only a couple dozen people would be there, but I preferred that type of scene, so I was excited about it. I was running about an hour late, but I was sure nobody would be there until at least an hour after it started, so I wasn't too worried. My costume was lazy, just the first thing I saw at Party City, a firefighter with a bloody axe. I called an Uber around 7 and let everyone know I was on my way. My driver pulled up in a trash Kia, missing its front bumper and windows tinted nearly pitch black. He rolled down his window and called my name. The guy was wearing sunglasses, even though it was completely dark out, and he had a nasty rash on his face. He had oily, matted hair that clung to his sweaty face. I hesitated a bit before getting in the car, but decided I was being too judgmental and got in. The ride was quiet at first, but then he asked me about my costume. I told him I was on the way to a Halloween party and had to get something last minute. He laughed this awkward, squeaky laugh and told me he'd never been to a party. He went into this monologue about how he never said more than a few words throughout high school, and that people wouldn't even look at him. He started to get mad just remembering it, and hit the steering wheel, then his forehead, while in the middle of his story. He was barely paying attention to the road, and I was sure we were going to crash. I told him it was all right and begged him to keep his eyes on the road. He managed to chill out after a bit and apologized. As we pulled up, he didn't unlock my door for a while and just stared at the house. He muttered something about missing out on life and finally unlocked my door. After I got out, he stayed parked in front of the house until I walked into the living room. The party was mellow. I started drinking immediately to get in a better mood after that guy ruined my spirits. A few drinks in and I was starting to have fun again. The girls who invited me were singing karaoke on the TV, and my friend was jamming out on the guitar. A couple of games of beer pong later, and I had all but forgotten that miserable Uber ride. That was when, around 10, I noticed someone new sitting in the living room. It was a tall, stocky man in a hoodie and a mask of Jason from Friday the 13th. I wondered who had invited him, seeing as everyone was accounted for. The guy sat in complete silence in the corner of the living room while the party went on around him. Eventually, I asked Rachel, my friend hosting the party, who he was. She looked at me, confused, and said that the guy told everyone he was invited by me. At that point, I was past confused and started to get creeped out. I walked up to where he was sitting and quietly watched the party go on around him. He didn't pay attention to me, even though I was standing over him. I went to tap him on the shoulder to get his attention, and he grabbed my arm before I could touch him and squeezed. I yelped and tugged my arm back. He let go and went back to staring at the party. I yelled at him, asking what his problem was, but he stayed completely quiet. Everyone stopped partying and was watching us. I told him to tell me who he was or get out, and he stood up, almost a head taller than me. I wasn't exactly short, but this guy was huge. There was a machete attached to his waist, which I was praying was a prop for his costume. Everyone stopped partying and was watching us. The whole party was dead silent. The guy walked to the middle of the room, put his head in his hands, and started sobbing. Some of his hair spilled out of his hood. It was familiar, black, oily, just like the Uber driver's. We all backed up, while his sobbing turned into screaming. The man grabbed the machete from his waist and pointed it at me. His voice was hard to make out through the mask, but he said something about how it wasn't supposed to be like this. He took the machete and threw it at the TV, shattering the screen, before running out of the house and down the street. Nobody chased him. We all just stood there in stunned silence. I was pumped full of adrenaline after genuinely thinking I was about to die. The first person to break the silence was Rachel, asking if she should call the cops, but there wasn't much of a point. We all left right after that, but I didn't call an Uber. I'm not sure if that guy was my driver, but I can't think of any other good explanation. He was seriously crazy, and I'm just glad nobody got hurt, but I know things could have gone much worse. So since then, I've gotten a lot more cautious about whose car I get in. Even though we were way too old to be trick-or-treating, My friend Jason sent our group chat a text asking if we all wanted to get together in costume and hit up a few houses for free candy. We hadn't heard from Jason in a few days, so it was a bit of a surprise. We all agreed that it could be fun, and planned to meet in one of the neighborhoods known to have the best candy, even though it was a bit remote. I was feeling lazy with my costume, so I dressed up in a black sheet and mask to go as the Scream guy. When we met up, most of my friends had similar ideas, with a Barack Obama and a Joker. The odd one out was Jason. Well, I assumed it was Jason, because he was the only one whose face I couldn't make out. Jason was wearing nothing but a black bodysuit covering everything, including his face and some torn up clothes covered in fake blood. The fact that the costume was so bad made it the most unnerving costume of any of us. We got going around the block. There was only a dozen or so houses on the entire street, so we took our time to talk and mess around. There were a few weird looks from the people answering the doors, but they still gave us candy before we left. One house had a big basket filled with oversized candy bars. I took two, but the rest of my friends emptied the entire thing except for Jason. Jason actually hadn't said a word the entire time. Eventually, we ran out of houses on that block and had to decide what was next. Kyle, the guy dressed as the Joker, suggested we find another block and get even more candy. I was kind of done with trick-or-treating by then. It did feel childish, especially after seeing how everyone reacted to us being there. Jason finally spoke up for the first time that night. His voice was muffled, so it was a bit hard to understand him. His voice was also deeper than usual, but I figured that was also the costume. He took out his bag and told us that he'd stolen alcohol from his parents and said we should go drink at the park. I wasn't big on drinking, but I figured it was a special occasion, so I might as well let loose for a bit. As we came to an agreement, Jason said he knew a spot where we could drink and eat our candy and that he'd lead us there. I was the only one getting a weird vibe, but after everyone else agreed to it, I gave in and decided to follow Jason. We ended up on a trail that started at the end of the block. It was dark, and the only light came from our phones. We walked for around 20 minutes before finally making it to a spot in the canyon off trail. It was an opening under a canopy of bushes. The place was filled with trash and old beer bottles. There was also a sleeping bag and some broken glass pipes in the dirt. I asked Jason if this was really the place he was thinking of, and he nodded, pointing to the view of the sky through the canopy. It was really nice, I had to admit. The stars were in full view, and the moon was bright enough that I could see everything. We started drinking the stolen vodka. Jason just sat back and watched us through the black face covering while we got more and more drunk. Kyle and Drew were wobbling around like idiots, and I was starting to feel it too. We were making way too much, considering that there were houses just outside of the canyon. As it got later, I knew it was time to head out, but I was starting to feel really out of it, way more than I should have with how much I had drank. The world started to get hazy, and I looked over to find Kyle and Drew both passed out. Jason stood up for the first time and stood over me. I mumbled, asking him what he was doing, and he knelt down over me, inches from my face. I wanted to struggle, but my body wasn't listening. Jason reached out to touch my face, but as he brushed my skin, three flashlights shone on the trail and down into our area. Jason, well, by then I was doubting it was Jason at all, got up and ran off just as three people hopped down into our camp. I passed out as the officer approached me. The next day, we found out that Jason had lost his phone 3 days before, meaning he wasn't the one sending those texts, and he wasn't the one with us that night. Whoever that guy was, he'd spiked our drinks and had something planned for us once we were unconscious. I hope he just wanted to rob us, but I think it might have been something worse. That was the last year I went trick-or-treating. The fun was completely gone, and I couldn't get the feeling of that guy pretending to be Jason touching me out of my head. We never talked much about the incident, and the police never found out who the guy was. I hope he gets caught eventually, and that I never run into him for the rest of my life. Halloween storms always carry extra intensity, as if they somehow match the mood of that day in the year. I remember how powerful the thunder was, the windows rattling and the lights flickering. Even modern conveniences yield to nature, I guess. That night, however, had more to do with the supernatural than anything else. I still get goosebumps when I think about it. My parents were at a party the year this happened, so I decided to have three friends over while they were gone. Liam, Sophie, and Josh. We didn't feel like going trick-or-treating that night. So we ended up in the basement playing a dusty old board game. It's kind of funny how we found ourselves playing it despite my uncle's warning. My uncle joked to me once saying, "Never touch that board or you'll be cursed." But there we were, disregarding his advice. I thought my uncle was just pulling my leg, so I figured we were safe to play it. We sat around a folding table, lit a few candles because the power was malfunctioning, and put the little pointer at the center of the board. The game was new to all of us. Liam was brave enough to get us started. "Is anyone there?" He spoke dramatically, as if to imply that the task of questioning the board was frightening. The pointer scraped slowly to Y, then E, then S. We laughed out loud. Sophie quipped playfully, "Nice try, Josh." We assumed he was the one who moved the pointer. It seemed as though silly questions rolled right off our tongues. "Will I fail math? Will Sophie marry a rock star?" The responses from the pointer on the board made us crack up even harder. I almost forgot the storm outside by this point. The water dripping from the basement ceiling into a rusty pan below didn't even faze me. Then, something strange happened. Without anyone asking, the pointer shifted again, this time on its own. It went from B to U, spelling B-E-H-I-N-D-Y-O-U. Behind you. Our laughter was cut short. How did that... Josh turned quickly when the pointer landed, expecting something or someone to be there. All we saw was the furnace looming in the shadows. I couldn't believe it. I knew I saw the pointer move to those words, but there wasn't any logical explanation for it. "Okay, which one of you?" I started. Before I could finish, though, we all heard a heavy thunk rattle through the pipes overhead. Nobody moved a muscle. We all made eye contact, and then Liam suggested, "Wind." It wasn't convincing, his voice cracking from the uncertainty in his belief. "Old house, right?" Then another noise. This time it was lighter, like a shoe scuffling the concrete. "What was that?" Sophie was the next to speak. "But basements don't have wind." She said it intensely but quietly, as if to get our attention without disturbing someone in the next room. I grabbed the flashlight cautiously, its beam shaky, and surveyed the room. Boxes, shelves, and the furnace. "Okay, nothing out of the ordinary. Let's just pack it up," Josh suggested. "Wait," I said. I had to know how. "One more question." I placed my fingers on the pointer, and then I asked the board, "Who are you?" It moved instantly, without hesitation. "This can't be good. S-T-A-Y. Stay." Suddenly, the candle flames bent sideways, as if someone had breathed on them and put them out. A chilling draft cut through the room, goosebumps forming on my arms. "We're done," Sophie snapped, standing up as she tried to grab the board. But before she could, we noticed something in the corner of the room had stirred. It appeared darker, like it was just another space in the room, only this was pitch black. But then that darkness shifted, lifting, stretching, and a shape began to take form. It was taller than any of us, and its head scraped the low beams. The others didn't get a clear look at it, but I did. The outline. It had a face, pale and featureless, like chalk. I felt my chest drop. Then the flashlight flickered out. No, no, no. I should have listened to my uncle. I thought. Whatever it was alone with us in the dark. I heard a whisper. It was Liam, petrified, saying run. We bolted to the stairs, heavy steps striking the concrete behind us. I knew the figure was gaining on us, but I couldn't force myself to look back. Josh shoved Sophie up the stairs ahead of him, and I was the last one to make it to ground level. I slammed the basement door. At first, I was surprised by silence, Then the knob twisted. I immediately grabbed it tightly before the door could fully open, as my heart pounded like it would break free from its cage. The figure we saw yanked the door harder than human hands should. Just when I thought the door would give way, there was silence. I didn't hesitate any longer. I signaled to Sophie to grab the phone in the kitchen. She dialed 911 frantically, informing the operator of what we had just witnessed. My friends huddled in fear as I kept a hand on the doorknob at all times. Minutes later, a police officer arrived, and as if on cue, the power miraculously came back on. We felt dread as the police officer stepped down into the basement, the place from which we had narrowly escaped. He flicked on the light and began rummaging through boxes and shelves, peering at the furnace. Nothing out of the ordinary so far. No one was there. At least not anymore. There were no other footprints either. The dusty floor hadn't picked up a trace of other footsteps except for our scramble to the door. The police officer concluded the premises were clear of any other presence, his tone condescending. He looked at us as if he didn't believe our account, but didn't have the audacity to call us liars. After the police officer established we were safe, we dragged the game out to the trash, recovering our wits as best as we could. We didn't say much. It wasn't long before their parents arrived to pick them up. I had to wait in that house alone, my parents still out. And by this time, the storm had died, the candles had burned out, and the basement door was still closed. That night was hard to sleep. Whatever I saw might still be there. I didn't tell my parents yet, but I decided the next morning I would prove to myself it was nothing. As the sunrise illuminated the valley, I looked for the game in the trash. The only problem was, it wasn't there. I couldn't find it anywhere. I looked and looked. I finally found it, back on the table, in the basement, with the pointer in the center. How did it? Before I could answer that thought, I saw a single word spelled out on the board. I still get the shivers. All it spelt was, S-T-A. Why?